Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, we've been waiting for this all week long. Get ready now. Get set. It's the show you've been waiting for. We're in 5 countries across the world. Welcome to my friends in Bangladesh, United Kingdom, South America, and Canada. It's Empowerment Network. Oh, yeah. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rohn, coming to you live. I'd like to again welcome our listeners from Bangladesh, Canada, the United Kingdom, and yes, Canada again, and South America as well. We welcome you to our show today. We have a powerful show. It's John Mitchell Jr. Day right here on the Empowerment Network. We're going to learn a little bit about our history and about the empowerment concepts along the way. We would like to start with the Empowerment Pledge, and that pledge is I will work on myself. And if you, as an African-American, will make a pledge to work on yourself, your issues, your concerns, your hurts, your pains, those things that you know you need to work on and change about yourself, then life will gradually get better for you. So today we're going to talk about John Mitchell, but first I'll dive into the NAAEA. It is an organization that has been developed to motivate, empower, and inspire African-Americans to work on themselves, to do the internal, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial work we need to do to become positive participants in this society. And so we have to do the work of working on ourselves. We have to organize in 5 areas: politics, economics, athletics, which encompasses wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. And if we do that, if we just do the work of working on ourselves in our communities, wherever we are, we will find that change will definitely happen. And so today we're going to talk about a Richmond icon, if you will, John Mitchell Jr. So today we're going to have, it will be an open discussion. Brother George is going to come in and bring some points on Mr. Mitchell and the work that he did. He's a native of Richmond. And if you all know, Richmond is the capital of slavery and the Confederacy. And so imagine the work of what you'll hear today and having to do that in this climate here with segregation and racism and lynching and all that going on. So I'm going to now bring Brother George in. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
All right. Great.
Today is, yes, sir.
Yeah, we're celebrating John Mitchell Jr. Day. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother.
All right. Well, let's get started.
Okay. In honor of John Mitchell Jr., who was a prominent newspaper editor, educator, politician, banker, and civil rights activist. John Mitchell Jr. was born on July 11, 1863, and he was still enslaved. I don't know how that was, but maybe it was because a lot of the Confederate states were still fighting, because emancipation was January 1st, 1863, but at any rate, he was born on the Liburnum, I'm going to call it an estate, and it was in Henrico County. The owner of that estate was James Lyons, and he was a lawyer and legislator and a member of the Convention of 1850 and also a member of the House of Representatives of the Confederacy of the United States that was still going on. Once they were emancipated, his family, they decided to stay at the Liburnum. And at age 10, he became the carriage boy for the lawyer, James Lyons. Now, his I guess that put him in close proximity of politics by basically chauffeuring him around as a small boy. Those years, he was learning some things about politics. Now, when you talk about his education, his mother taught him how to read, and eventually he went to a private Baptist minister school by the name of Anthony Binger. He then attended the Navy Hill School, which was a new public school at the time. And eventually, we know what Navy Hill is up in Church Hill. And from 1876 to 1881, he attended and studied at the Richmond Colored Normal School, which was a high school that specialized in training African-American teachers. He graduated valedictorian of his class, and at that point, his career started because he started teaching at Fredericksburg Colored School and then returned to Richmond in 1883 to teach at Valley School. In 1884, he and 10 other African-American teachers were fired by the newly appointed Democratic school board. Now, that's another interesting thing, that back then it's obvious that we were Republicans and the Democrats were the ones that were holding up our progress and trying to fight for segregation and different things like that. And so after being released, he continued his writing and focused on journalism, because at the same time that he was teaching at the Valley School, he was also writing articles for the New York Globe. And so if you want to talk about something from that point, or would you like for me to continue, brother?
Yeah, we'll pull over right there for a minute, George. Brother, thank you for that so far. So what we're going to do today is we're going to have a dialogue, and then we'll go into segments where we'll bring the listeners in, and I'll kind of talk a little bit, and I'll bring it back to George to tell us some more about our icon and the celebration of John Mitchell Jr. And so what we learned today is that, and for our listeners who are not from the Richmond area, John Mitchell Jr. was enslaved here in Richmond. And when George is talking about Richmond Colored Normal School, that is the first school for African Americans in the nation established after emancipation through the Freedmen's Bureau. And so John Mitchell Jr. was not only an educator, he came through that system. He began to teach and train our people to be the best people that they can be. And so that's what the NAAEA is all about. It's about educating our people and giving us an opportunity to learn and to grow and to prosper. And so he has used his gifts and talents and abilities, as you can see by what the brother just added, is that this man came from enslavement and used all the tools available to him to be successful. I'm going to pull over to the side and bring my co-host in. Stan Macklin, are you available for conversation?
Glad to be a part of the NAAEA.
Thank you, brother. We're talking about and celebrating the life and legacy of John Mitchell Jr., one of our champions here in Richmond, Virginia. And so Brother George is going to be narrating us through this conversation about John Mitchell, but we're also going to compare and contrast, have a dialogue, see if we can bring some current events in, as well as try to parallel what that experience was and gain our knowledge base and expand that on what we need to do now. So I don't know if you caught the first end of it, but we're talking about John Mitchell today. And any thoughts on what we have so far?
Well, you know, during the early days, after the Emancipation Proclamation took place, a lot of the men and women who had been enslaved were free in terms of being able, basically the movement at, and education becomes the number one priority. And Freedmansboro helped to raise up and provide resources so that education, schools could go forth and things like that. And so John Minto is one of those pioneers that helped to facilitate that important and essential ingredient to us as a people. And we need to never forget that, because education always been used as the master key using to be able to navigate through the waters of darkness of being uninformed and ignorant. So we just salute him as well as all the other educators. And that's what AAEA is about. It's about educating as well. I think that's one of the core pillars.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So that's all I had to say, man.
Okay. Brother George, give us a little more on John Mitchell, and then we'll go to the lines.
Okay. In December of 1884, at the age of 21, he began to edit the weekly Richmond Planet. He edited and published the paper out of his room at a boarding house. He was living in a boarding situation, and he set up everything in that small room and ran the operation from there. Once he began to make a lot of progress, he was able to move his headquarters to the Swan Tavern on Broad Street, which is the site of the Library of Virginia today. The Richmond Planet gained national prominence and earned him president of the African. He was voted in as president of the African American Press Association in 1890, and he served on that board. He served in that position until September of 1894. Now, the Richmond Planet was most noted in particular for Mitchell's anti-lynching efforts. His articles would list victims and graphic images of lynchings. In other words, like some of the lynchings that you see in the books with kids standing around and not seem like they bothered and all that. You see the brothers hanging from the trees. He may have taken some of those pictures because they're talking about graphic images, and pretty much that's it. Now, from that point, you know, he reporting and taking a real interest in anti-lynching, that put him in a category of like a civil rights activist. And so Mitchell prevented many lynchings by obtaining legal counsel for unjustly convicted African Americans, appealing to government officials, and fundraising, you know, for their legal fees. He once wrote, lynching is a barbarous practice that has been outlawed by civilized nations of the world. In other words, he was slapping them in the face with the idea that it's no way that this nation should still have lynching when every other place in the world has outlawed it, you know. And now, one interesting thing that he did as a civil rights activist, he stepped in to help out a young brother by the name of Simon Walker. And he was a 15-year-old African-American boy that was accused of raping a young white woman. Now, I don't know if he actually raped the girl or if it was one of those situations like it usually is where they got caught together and shows she just hollered rape. But at any rate, it doesn't really say whether he was actually guilty or not. But he was a 15-year-old boy and he was charged with rape. And so as Walker's execution date neared, Mitchell appealed to the governor, whose name was Fitzhugh Lee, for a stay of execution. And so Fitzhugh was out of town, and so Mitchell had to catch the train across Virginia to go to where he was to get a stay of only 30 days. You know, that's not a lot of period, a lot of time. And so he did get the signature, and he got the stay for the 30 days. And so in the meantime, Mitchell paid for an attorney for Mr. Walker, for the boy named Walker. And when the 30 days was running out, Walker needed another stay. So this time he had to take horse and carriage through muddy rain late at night to go to the Chesterfield County Courthouse and file those papers, you know, the day before the stay was up. Now, eventually, Mitchell was able to raise money to secure a decent lawyer for Simon Walker, and he eventually, through protests and petitions, and finally he got the governor to commute the death sentence for the boy and give him a 20-year prison sentence.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot. So imagine for a moment how courageous this brother is to be working on change in our community at such a challenging time in our community with racism going on and all of those things. It's amazing that a black man could accomplish so much during that time. Stan, do you have anything you want to share before we go to the lines?
Well, yeah, the brother did, man, he's an educator in himself. And when we're able to, historians and educators like that, it makes a difference. And I really enjoyed him sharing the story, and I hope there's ways that we could flesh that out more. So, yes, I'm ready
exactly
to get your line.
Exactly. And I want to thank Brother George. He is serving on the education portion of the NAAEA. And so he is our resident historian and lecturer as well on African-American and African history as well. So we thank him for joining us today. And also join us for some of the community conversations that we have during the week on African-American history. And we're doing a series on slavery right now. So if you go to our main website, you can check that out as well. Very detailed information on the process. We're going to the lines now. 9282. It's the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin coming to you live. Talk to me.
Good afternoon, everyone on the line that's listening. Yes, sir, this is 9282. Good afternoon, brothers and sisters.
Good afternoon.
I'm enjoying the conversation and the lesson, the history lesson. Actually, I did not know about the brother Mitchell until today, until this phone call, until Brother George started to elaborate on it and tell us about him, and that's a great thing. And it made me think about the importance of journalism or communication, and to be able to have a vehicle, the power of that, to have a vehicle to communicate to the masses of your people is just, as I said, it's power. And we must harness that power and take advantage of that power. Once you're put in front of our people to communicate, which also means to educate when you're communicating, we must not take that for granted. I mean, that's a powerful think about it. I mean, most of everything we know as a people, we got through journalism, communication, newspaper, radio, television, broadcast journalism, and so forth, movies. All that's communicating. It gives a message. It plants thoughts on your mind. It uplifts you if done properly. And I found myself in that position and not knowing I was in the position until years after being in the position. And what I mean by that is I grew up in Gilpin Court in Richmond. I was in a band back in the 60s, in the mid-late 60s with a group of white guys from Fulton Hill that I met at John Marshall High School. And I dropped out of high school, I was married, had a child before my 18th birthday. I, you know, dropped out of high school, had to take a job, you know, because I had a family to support. And I had a second job, and my second job was in this band with these white guys.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the white guys, who was an older guy, most of us were young. We were teenagers. But we had one saxophone player, trumpet player, a white guy named Malcolm Lockerman. He was older, and he got in the band with us, and he worked at Channel 8, WXCX, mm-hmm. TV8, Petersburg, Richmond at that time. And he knew my situation, you know, like I said, we were in the band together and all. And he asked me one day if I thought I could learn how to run a TV camera. And I said,
mm-hmm.
Malcolm, I'll try anything, you know. And he said, okay, I'm going to try to get you an interview down at Channel 8 because we need a camera person, cameraman.
Right.
So he got me an interview, and I got the job. So next thing I know, I'm working. I became the first black in the Richmond area, at least, maybe,
wow.
to work in TV production at
okay.
in Richmond when I worked at Channel 8 and down in Petersburg. And I ran it, for those of us old enough to remember, I used to run the camera on Shock Theater with the Bowman Bot.
Okay.
You know, and I started out running camera at Channel 8. And then a couple of years after doing that and then the band and so forth, my draft lottery number came up. And to keep from going to Vietnam in the Army, I joined the Navy. And because
mm-hmm.
of the job I had at Channel 8 working in television production, that led to me getting the job on an aircraft carrier, the USS Constellation, working in radio and TV on the carrier. And I knew nothing about, you know, then I became a disc jockey on the ship. You know, I was a disc jockey on the ship working in TV production and so forth. And still not knowing the power of the
mm-hmm.
job, the journalism that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm just
doing things, you know, and I went to Vietnam and became a journalist and so forth. Then I got on another ship, and I ended up reenlisting in the Navy, something I never thought I would do. And then I went to journalism school, Fort Benjamin Harrison, Indiana, to study print journalism, you know, because I said, well, all I know right now is broadcast journalism, television and radio production. And so when I went to print journalism school, I got assigned to San Diego, Naval Air Station North Island out in San Diego, and I became the first black editor of the largest newspaper in the Navy. I still didn't know
wow.
what that meant and what was going
okay.
on, you know. And because of that job, well, at this time now, I started to see what racism was all about.
Mm.
Being the first black journalist in the Navy to be the editor of the largest newspaper in the Navy, this was back in 1975, I was the only black in the building, you know, only black man in the building. I'm going, you know, I started to catch hell, you know, all the dirty
okay.
jobs, assignment, everything. So I found myself in a position where I had to push back against the system, to where I had to stand
okay.
up and say, oh, no, this is not going to happen to me. I had to write letters. I had to complain. I sent letters to the ACLU, the American Black Caucus, I had to send letters to the Chief of Naval Information Office and so forth. So all this brought more and more attention on me that I was not seeking, you know, that I still didn't understand the power of the job I had, being an editor of this newspaper.
Okay.
My job was to do it the best I could, because I ain't want nobody to say, here's another nigga that don't know what he's doing.
Hmm.
You know, because that paper reflected me every week. It was a weekly newspaper.
Yeah.
And so
let
then
me ask a question. My brother... That's profound, what you're just saying right now. That's profound. Of course, we would not have known that if you had not, if today's topic was able to bring it out. How come you didn't decide making a career out of that?
I ended up doing it. See, what happened, once I started to fight back, they brought me up on charges to try to get me for conspiracy to commit murder. And I knew I hadn't done that. So they were just trying to get rid of me because they didn't want this black man to be in charge of this news of the papers, you know.
Right.
But at the time, I didn't know what was going on. You know, I'm a little boy
right.
from Gibbon Court. I still didn't know the dynamics of it all, what was going
Look
on. And
that.
So then they were just trying to get rid of me because I was there 4 years. So what happened
when
they couldn't bring
the editor of the paper?
from Gilpin Court. When I couldn't, and then when they couldn't get me on the conspiracy commit murder charges, they just wanted to get rid of me. So then what they did, they recommended me the captain of the base, became my friend, and wanted to do me all kinds of favors. Told me to apply for any school I wanted to go to in the Navy. And I told him at the time, I said, Captain, I'm getting out. I said, I'm done with this, man. I can't put up with this no more. He said, I just go to any school you want to go to. And he kept pushing me to go to a school while they investigated me for conspiracy to commit murder. So I finally said, okay, and I went to a book of schools available to Navy journalists, found this course in motion picture script writing production at the University of Southern California, which is where Spielberg
All right, brother, I'm a hold you right there. I got to hold you right there because we got a little more to do, and I got this brother that got to bring it in. But I love your story. We're going to tie this journalism piece into John Mitchell Jr., so hold tight right there, right? And I'm going back to the lines again. Now, I'm going to go back to Brother George, and then we'll go back to the line. Stan, you got anything before we continue to move forward with John Mitchell?
He's a story in itself, and I definitely love to continue to hear about his journey.
Right. Well, I mean, hey, it's a beautiful, remarkable story. And again, we have to understand the importance of journalism, right, about passing a message on and about also listening and learning and reading as well. All right, Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, let's keep it moving.
Okay, I'm going to finish out the piece with lynching and try to get to another category in the interest of time.
Okay.
Mitchell also encouraged our people to prevent lynching by carrying weapons for self-defense. And he said that the best remedy for a lyncher or a cursed midnight rider, he once said, is a 16-shot Winchester rifle in the hands of a Negro that can shoot it and had the courage to pull the trigger. So eventually had gotten some death threats when he went to a place called Charlotte County. Now, I don't know if that's Charlottesville or not, because I haven't heard of Charlotte County. Maybe one of y'all have. But upon his return there, he was toting two pistols as a statement to that racist society there. In other words, he came up just like the brothers did the other day, you know, with like, hey, I ain't scared of none of y'all, you know, like I got my guns, and if y'all want to, you know, we can go ahead and shoot it out. So this brother was pretty courageous, man. You know, Mitchell also wrote in his paper, he said, when the Negro learns to love and admire the Negro, other races will learn to love and admire us. And according to a brother, you know, that was writing for the Indianapolis Freedom, he said, no stronger race man is known among us than John Mitchell Jr. So he was talking about everybody in the country. And I'm impressed because Frederick Douglass was around this time also. So you had some people that were out there. Now, I'm going to move into the category when Mitchell becomes a politician.
All right, hold on before you go there, brother.
Yes, sir.
I'm going back to the lines for a minute. But I want to add, we're talking about here educated pistol packing journalist that was an educator back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Stan, anything you want to add before we go to the lines? All right. I'm going to go to 7974. 7974 is the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin, are you available for conversation?
Yes. I think for me, learning, I knew about John Mitchell, but probably not to the depth of the information that has been given today. But what I found interesting about him and some of the parallels and talking about what's happening now, and even the gentleman who gave his story, is that we know that power, data or information, has always been a source of power in our society. And so whether that's through communication or journalism written, you know, why we weren't able to read or given the opportunity to read during slavery is all because it's about access to information that can liberate you, essentially. And so I think about how John Mitchell Jr. was also later in life railroaded after he, you know, had a bank and basically railroaded through the system to the criminal justice system, and how that continues to still happen today to people who aligned with power in terms of particularly Black people. When they get a certain amount of power, how we still have, even looking at the governor election in Georgia, Stacey Abrams, several years back, where we're still doing things or still strategies and how white supremacy is playing out to disenfranchise Black people. And so I think John Mitchell's story, he really was truly a Renaissance man in the way that he was doing multiple things in trying to bring African Americans along. And that included also the streetcar boycott in Richmond, and I think it was 1904 with Maggie Walker. And so looking at strategy, and I think that's really important in terms of, we've talked about before, what we can use as strategy today, right, and having points. And so he talked about hitting white people in their in the pockets and knowing that that financial burden was going to be an agony to them. And so although it didn't materialize that way, I think, again, looking at what the strategy is important, and knowing how to fight that battle.
All right. It's important to have a strategy. Okay, so we're talking about celebrating the life, legacy, and African-American history, African history of our brother and dear friend John Mitchell Jr. So it's John Mitchell Jr. Day here at the NAAEA, and we want to celebrate him. Do your homework on some history, right? Let's learn about ourselves, but you got to be able to want to do the research. All right, Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, let's go back to you, and then we'll hit the lines again. Yes, sir.
Okay. Mitchell also held political office. In 1888, he was elected as a Republican to the Richmond Common Council, and 2 years later to the Board of Aldermen, and served until 1896. After the gerrymandering started, it was very difficult for any African-American back then to get elected to anything because they started, everybody knows what gerrymandering is, but for the sake of argument, gerrymandering is when they cut up like a Black area into two or three parts and then attach it to white areas so that it dilutes the Black vote. So it's not just one powerful vote. It gets diluted into other, you know, white areas where they can just dilute your vote, and then your vote will be rendered ineffective. Now, in some of these things that are going on are overlapping. So I might be repeating a time period, but it's like overlapping. Now, he also, in 1891, he secured $20,000 to build an African-American school. And in 1894, he secured funding to build an armory for the 1st Battalion Virginia Volunteers, a Black militia regiment in Jackson Ward. And as the sister said earlier, he also got together with Maggie Lena Walker and ushered the streetcar boycott. And the streetcar boycott, it was successful in closing down the company, which was the Virginia Passenger and Power Company. They closed down probably 6 months after the boycott because they were a new company in the first place. But he still really didn't succeed at what he was trying to do, which was to eliminate segregation in on the public transportation. And what happened was the General Assembly passed a law that all transportation be segregated. You want me to continue or?
We'll hold right there. So
okay.
And looking at this, it's him, John Mitchell himself, participating in the political process, right? He is in the process, and with the NAAEA again, is that we're talking about politics and how to educate ourselves and become informed in the area of politics. And so if he's engaging right in that area. And so if you look very carefully at how the laws are being enacted, we have to be careful that we're educated on what the law is. And that's why the vote is important, not just in the presidential election, but on the local level as well. Stan, are you there? All right. Well, I'm going to go down into the lines now. All right. Talk to me, brother.
Man, I'm just enjoying the day, you know. Sometimes, you know, it's good just to be like a sponge, absorbing all in.
So we're looking at how many areas at this point. So John Mitchell, we can say in the NAAEA concept, he's participating in politics, right? He's participating in economics to raise $20,000. Can we do that? Can we build a school? Can we say we're going to have an initiative to build a school? And think about in the late 1800s with being able to garner $20,000 to do something with. Can we get ourselves together in order to do something similar to that? Also, he is involved himself in education and culture as well. I think having a newspaper speaks to this man's educational and his knowledge piece, where he is really putting together a great platform to speak to our people. I'm going to the lines now, Stan. I'm going to 0946 the Empowerment Network, Marvin Rome and Stan Mackin, coming to you live. Are you there?
Yes. Good afternoon. I've been listening to the call, and one of the things that I do know that we're brilliant people. There's no doubt about that. I read a little bit about John Mitchell's story, and it ends very tragic. It reminds me of Garvey's story when he did what he did. The system found ways to prosecute them on fraud or some illegal charges. And when the Mechanic Savings Bank failed, when it came to Mitchell, and maybe Brother George can offer more insight on this, there was a turn in the economy, and it looks like they didn't have a reserve. And so my concern is this, is that they have made these laws. We didn't make them. And trust me, whoever creates the contract has the upper hand, because the devil is in the details. And so we got to accept that whatever we get, it's only going to last for a few years, and they're going to find the loophole that they created to overturn it. And I think that if we will stop hoping that the white population is going to change, then we will come to the table with, I think, better ideas, because they're not going to change. Racism is going to be here. So if we have no equity, it doesn't matter what we do. Eventually, we will be defunded because we don't own the equity. We don't own the stock in the concept or idea. And so, you know, if we don't understand that without our own equity, we cannot solve the disparities that are in the black community, we can't do it. And so I don't know, as far as the economic piece, is what is it going to take for us to understand that, I think somebody, a caller mentioned earlier about boycotting and all of that when it comes to money. I don't see any other way of anything happening because, and I'll end with this, we're in a phase now, you know, when we had the industrial revolution or the agricultural phase, then we moved into the industrialization phase. Now we're moving into the high-tech phase. And what I see is just a whole bunch of us that are falling through the cracks because media has changed. Social media has changed. How you do radio has changed. How you invest money, the vehicles that they're using to do that have changed. And so there's a bunch of changing that's going on, and I don't know if we are abreast to all the new stuff that's happening, and because we can't plug in on those platforms, then I think that that's a big hindrance for us, and that has to do with how companies are organized. So that's what stood out to me, was that there was just no reserve, and so once there was no reserve, then the bank failed, and so I think we've got to find a way to build up our equity when it's all said and done.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And now, the power, we have to understand the power of economics, right, in this game of capitalism. And so I think what we see here is that we have to be able to control our resources, right? We have to be able to control our economy. Stan, you there? What you got?
Well, you know, I'm just torn in between I'm just tired of trying to fit in to get in, and I'm a firm believer we must develop and design, collaborate together our own institutions to define our own reality. We got to do that. As the sister just said it, she just said it. Excuse me, I've been in this thing over 40 years, and it ain't changing. White is right to them. It just seems like you're going to play their game. You got to go according to their standards and fit in to get in. And it's like that. And why we got to do that? We got to cut that out. We got to go back to our original position and destiny. We originally are kings and queens. That's the position that we should operate from, at least while we're here on earth. And we're allowing the saboteurs of our destiny to become reality in our life, and we got to put an end to that nonsense, that madness. It must stop. And that's
the madness must stop. All right, we're talking about a Renaissance man today, John Mitchell Jr., and we're celebrating him on the NAAEA Empowerment Saturday show. Brother George, let's continue on.
Yes, sir. Okay, he always was committed to the Richmond Planet and the anti-lynching stance until, you know, lynching was outlawed. He was, as long as he was alive, he was still pressing, you know, the issues that he started with the Richmond Planet. But he also started focusing on business endeavors. And in 1880s, Mitchell had joined a Grand United Order of the True Reformers, which was a life insurance provider for African Americans. I'm just, you know, as I studied this guy, I realized that our people were being very resourceful with how they were doing things, because they were taking like Mason orders and using it as an insurance company, because the people that probably were members of it was professional type people, you know. But the association establisher, William Washington Brown, in 1889, he decided to open a True Reformers Bank. I guess he was very profitable with the insurance company, and so he opened up the True Reformers Bank, which Mitchell sat on the board for 5 years. And I'm assuming in those 5 years that he learned quite a bit about the banking industry. And in 1892, Mitchell joined the Knights of Pythias, an African-American secret fraternal order. and became the Grand Chancellor of the Virginia chapter in 1894. You know, like, it seemed like whatever the brother touched, it just turned to gold. And so he traveled through the states and recruited and established new lodges. You know, because he was the chancellor, he established new lodges, and he also, he also refined the program that they had with self-assurance, and so that picked up, and he eventually was able to establish the Mechanics Savings Bank.
Wow. So let's do a recap. This brother was into politics, right? He was into economics with insurance and banking. He was into education by building schools. He was into journalism, right, with his own newspaper. So he is doing insurance. He is making friends. He is a Renaissance. He is a true Renaissance man. And so as you can see, the skills and abilities that this brother is using in the late 1800s, it's 2020. And what I want to do now is I want to go back to the brother that talked about journalism, and I want him to share the importance of what that is. I'm going back to the line, Stan. 9282, yes. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Can you talk to us a bit about the importance of journalism and why that needs to happen in the African-American community?
Well, I'll put it this way. When you go for a job interview, corporations list the top three things that they want to see in a potential employee. Number one of those top three things is communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You have to be able to effectively communicate. That power, as we've been talking about and the sister mentioned earlier, in communications. Okay? You have to. And we have to understand that power in communicating. We call it journalism or whatever. Journalism is just a profession that is given to the field of communication. Of course, it's communication, which incorporates journalism and so forth, whether you're broadcast journalism, journalists, print journalists, et cetera. It's just because it's giving you a vehicle, if you will, or avenue to where you can, what we call mass communications, to where you're communicating with the masses, you know, the masses of people. Therefore, you can give them propaganda. You can give them lies, whatever. You can give them the truth. But that's the power in it. And as we see in the world in which we're living today, more lies are being told. Well, I ain't going to say more lies are being told than they ever have been. They've been told all along. Now we've been able to, people are just making it obvious that they're lying.
Well, let me ask you this. How can we become more effective right now, today, in terms of using the media in the African-American community?
We need to research. Don't take the word of the first person you hear. You know, don't say you heard it on NBC. You heard it on CBS. And God, please don't say you heard it on Fox or you read it in the New York Times. Okay, that may be the starting point, but you got to check it out for yourself. You got to research and look at it and analyze. Give me information to prove that what I'm being told is true. It's unfortunately that's how people are, but people, just because somebody tell you, you know, I remember years ago I started listening to a pastor, Frederick K. Price. And at that time, what attracted me to Frederick K. Price was the first preacher I had seen and up until that point that said, bring your Bible, open your Bible. Read along with me when I'm reading you this scripture. Don't take my word for it. You read what it's saying in the Bible. You analyze it. You interpret it. So that's what got me. Because I said, okay, I like that. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to analyze it and try to determine for me if it's something I can hang my hat on. That's
right.
What we need to do. Now, a key element of communication, and one of the brothers I may have been Stan mentioned it earlier, I can't remember, Stan or George, of communicating, effective communication, you must listen. To have effective two-way communication, you must listen.
Say that again.
We must be able to listen. And when I say listen, not just having your mouth shut, waiting for the person to take a breath, and you thinking about what you're going to say, time to take a breath. You know what I mean? Time to get a time. I'm going to jump again.
That's
now,
right.
That's not listening. You
right.
know, listen to what the person's saying, analyzing, and then have an intelligent conversation for we can have effective two-way communication. And, you know, be willing to admit you wrong. You know, we have to be able to say, you know what? Elijah Muhammad, you just said, if you can show me a better way of doing this thing, I will follow you.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't set on my way. If you can show me, mm-hmm. you come up with something that's better than what I got, I will go with you. We've got to be
mm-hmm.
willing to do that. You know, to say, okay, I ain't stubborn. I ain't arrogant. You know, it ain't about me. It's about the truth. And if you can show me something that's better than what I'm now saying, and I say that, and I can say that you're right, then, you know, I'm
right.
going to say, brother, I'm with you. You
mm-hmm.
know,
okay.
that's the power of
that's
communication, you know. You know,
that's
we have
so true.
To.
All right, so let's get back to Brother George. Thank you, brother, on that one. Communication is essential to every aspect of relationship in our community. Brother George. Let's close out. We got about 8 minutes left.
All right, I'm going to close it out. Mitchell had success for about 20 years with the Mechanics Bank. And after World War One, you know, the economy kind of took a downturn. It went down. And I guess that affected his business, and it also affected the finances of the company, coupled with the bank regulators, because by now they probably was fed up with his success and trying to do everything they could to ruin his life. And so he closed the bank in 1922. And once the bank was closed, you know, they came after him with accusations of using the bank's money, you know, misusing the bank's money. And so he was indicted and charged with fraud and theft in December of 1922, and was sentenced.
How many times we heard that?
Prison. Yeah, he appealed.
Go ahead,
bro. In April 1923, after an appeal on March 19th, 1925, the Supreme Court of Appeals ruled in his favor, and the charges were dropped. But despite the triumphs and the successes and the courageousness of his life, you know, he died in poverty, just like the sister said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Anything that you want to take from that before we move to the lines? Anything you'd like to add before we go to the lines?
No, sir. I'm good. I like hearing what the people have to say.
All right, we're going. Thank you, Brother George. I will come back to you before the show ends. I'm going to 7974. Talk to us. What do you have?
Yeah, I think a lot of important points have been made today, and, you know, particularly about the importance of doing research yourself, as the other caller said. I think is critical that you have different streams of resources around the information that you get and that you vet it for yourself. The other thing that I get out of this is that we're talking about John Mitchell Jr. legacy. And so even though Brother George kind of talked about how he was left destitute as a result of what I see as probably being railroaded on fraudulent charges, even though it was overturned later, it already impacted his life in a way that he couldn't overcome that by the time he died. And so I think it makes me think about the legacy that he left, however, right? The legacy he left as an educator, the legacy he left as, you know, his political figure. And so it makes me think again, what about the legacies that we want to leave, right? And so he left a legacy that we're still talking about today. So regardless of even what the system did to him in terms of trying to railroad him and the things they did, he still left a legacy. And I think that's important that we think about as a community and individually, what is going to be the legacy that we continue to try to leave from others, and will people be talking about us 100 years from now and the things that we left for them to build on?
Well stated, my sister. Stan, what do you have?
Profound.
today. There's a lot of gold nuggets that's being tossed out here today. The conversation piece was very important because alienation is this mass. We talk about mass incarceration. There's mass alienation, and the only way we can navigate through that is communication. And we learned from being able to communicate by effectively. I think we talked about it earlier. Listening. That's
right.
The reason, you know, God gave us two ears and one mouth. And it's hard to do that because we do have thoughts that are occurring in our minds to what we want to say instead of just listening. And the other aspect is those devil deeds, man. Whenever we attempt to do something that's profound, we're going to get opposition. Discouragement comes. And if they can't discourage you, then they'll try their best to dismiss you. Just dismiss with whatever it is you're espousing. And the ultimate goal is to destroy you. I think you tossed in divide. But it just seems like this what they so call as a master race has got it so that it has to be their way or the highway. But we are brilliant people. We operate in excellence, and we need to set our own pace and prescribe to our goals of success. It makes a difference. So
that's so true.
And we do underestimate local history. His brother is espousing local history. That's good to know that. And every community has that. It just has to be flushed out.
True. So we will continue to encourage and motivate our people to learn more about our own history and be proud of that history. And so the more that we can understand who we are and the work that has been done and that foundation that has been laid for us through the work of champions like John Mitchell Jr. that we celebrate today, a icon who has done the work of effectively maximizing his ability. And think about this. He went using the political system to get his case overturned. Now, again, the damage was done. But again, he used his ability to effectively get what he wanted done through the system. And so we're getting close to closing out the show, but I want you to go back and if you guys are listening, share this with your friends. This is a great history that talks about some of the basic principles or tenets of the NAAEA, right? Understand the politics, understand the economics, right? Understand the usefulness of just going out and developing an insurance company, how it can generate money in the economy, right? We want to turn those dollars over and then create a banking system, right? So the financial piece is so important to our success. Lastly is being able to understand the importance of education. This man helped build schools. So like one of the callers said, what is going to be your legacy today? That's the challenge. Stan, anything before we get out of here?
A holistic approach is so necessary. Single-mindedness it has its place, but when we take the opportunity to apply a holistic viewpoint and methods, that's when we get on the road toward doing great things.
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you, Brother George. Thank you very much for giving us a lesson today on John Mitchell Jr. We're celebrating John Mitchell Jr. Day at the NAAEA. Join us live each week at 2 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Go out to our website, www.naaea.weebly.com. Go out to our Facebook site as well and become a member. Join today. It's the NAAEA every day, 365 days. We'll talk to you next Saturday. And plug into our daily community conversations. It's always some good information going on. We're here to educate politically, economically, culturally, and the like. Peace.